This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing.
This is one of my favorite segments of the show. We've got Jeremy Berenbaum. Jeremy is from classic.com. Now, before you start looking at it, classiq.com. Now, these guys know all about classic cars and just about cars, period. And Jeremy's been on the show, and this is our segment with him. Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Now,
how are you
doing today? What kind of Thanksgiving? Did you have a good one?
I had a great Thanksgiving. It was actually kind of cold and rainy out here in Northern California, which was cool because we just sat by the fire and hung inside and, you know, did family time.
I hear you went to an auto show. You know, had the big LA auto show a couple of weeks ago, but now you went to one in San Francisco, right?
I did, which was really nice.
All right, little flowers in your hair and the whole bit, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Playing Mamas and the Papas music and stuff like that. It's not a real big show, though, is it?
No, it's not a big show, and you don't really get to see, like, all the manufacturers there, which I was kind of surprised about, but one of the manufacturers I did enjoy seeing was the new Land Rover and their Defender. I was pretty impressed for the first time for this car coming back after, you know, the iconic Defender, and I think Land Rover had to make, like, a big smash hit, and I think they did a pretty good job.
Well, you know, Defender for years, folks, if you don't realize, that's the one you saw in all the old John Wayne movies, and anything with in South Africa, you'd have these like iconic Land Rovers with their all aluminum, and it was like their version, the British version of a Jeep, and it was just a beast. But they never really brought them in. You see some of them in the U.S. You see a fair amount of them actually, but they never really brought them in. But a lot of people have restored them, and it's kind of got a cult following. But they just came back out with it. So, Jeremy, what do you think?
I thought it was really cool. You know, they did a really good job blending the classic look, style, and function of the Defender, but, you know, giving it all the modern amenities that, you know, everybody wants in their cars today.
Well, you know, there's something about that. I mean, it's like when you see a new Jeep Wrangler. Okay. And I have my 46 CJ Willis, you know, which is a Jeep. And mine has nothing. You know, I mean, it's just got wheels and an engine, that kind of stuff. There's no technology in it, and the new ones are so high tech, but some of the Jeeps that get sold are stripped down models with, you know, the least everything you can get, because that's what the guys want to do. They want to take it out and beat the hell out of it off road, and they don't need the, you know, traction control and torque vectoring and this and that and all of the, you know, the blind spot monitoring and all that other stuff. They just want a basic vehicle that they can go and thrash. And I think that's what if I wanted a Defender, I would want one that would be, you know, kind of dressed down to take the doors off of it and go out there and beat it up. What about you?
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know if you can look at this modern one as kind of something like that. For that, I might have to recommend, you know, one of the older Defenders.
Right.
But in terms of like an everyday vehicle that you can still take out on the trail and I think do a really good job keeping up with some of the Jeeps, mm-hmm. I think it's a great car.
Is it expensive? Do you have any idea where it starts?
You know what? It's kind of got a cool price range. You know, base model sits at 50. The one they had at the auto show was the Defender X, which was the fully loaded,
yeah.
And that was sitting at $88,000. So it's kind of got a price range where you can get in at the really high end. But you know what? If you're just looking for the basic utilitarian use of the car, you can still kind of get away with something semi-affordable.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the people that had when Toyota had the Land Cruiser, and it used to be such a neat vehicle. You know, and it was then they came out with then they made it big and heavy and put all the luxury stuff, and now it's become a luxury vehicle for, you know, $88,000 or $85,000, and it's not anything like the old Land Cruiser. And some people are just kind of like, you know, they're kind of disappointed.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
and I don't know if you heard. I think Toyota said they're not going to continue making the Land Cruiser anymore. They'll still make the Lexus version of it. But I think it was too expensive for them to make two different versions of the same car.
Right, and they'd have to update it and everything else. It hadn't been updated since, I think, the George Bush administration. But and it was seeming like that. Now, we've got a couple car questions I want to ask you, all right? And let's talk about some of this stuff. And here's something on about newer cars. Emily, she asked me about nav system was on the new cars. You know, would you buy a new car with a nav system, or would you just get one with the Apple, you know, CarPlay and you know, Android Auto, what would you do? Would you get a nav system?
So I think the biggest thing for me personally is if you decide to forego the nav system, if that changes the screen setup on the car, because I think driving and still having the bigger display LCD screen is kind of nice. But you did bring up a point with the Apple CarPlay and using, you know, Apple Maps or Google Maps through that. I've used it in my sister's Subaru Crosstrek, and it's phenomenal. It's almost better than the map feature in the car.
Well, people ask me that all the time, and I said, guys, I wouldn't. There's no way I would buy a new car with a nav system. There are 87,000 new roads every year made. And in Texas, they're building roads like crazy, and they're always changing stuff around and this kind of stuff. You know, the Google and Waze and those kind of guys keep up with it. And they know where there's construction and things like that, where your nav system can't keep up with it unless you want to pay several hundred dollars and get an update every year. But then again, you're almost a year behind when you do that.
Right.
So it's so much better just using your phone. I think that's a big advantage. All right, now.
I kind of agree.
You agree. We agree on something. That's awesome. All right, George and Connie. All right, this one's kind of an odd. They're in Tampa, St. Pete, Florida. They're looking at a classic truck to pull a 3,900-pound classic Airstream trailer. I see more and more of that. Even some of the new trailers, they look classic. They look like they're made in the 50s, you know what I mean, and the 60s.
Yeah.
And he wants a classic truck. And he says, would it be better getting an HD truck? He'd probably only go maybe 1,000 miles a year and just tow it occasionally to some like these events that they have. There's a lot of campers that are all retro, stuff like that. And, you know, a 25-year-old truck is kind of makes it a classic, right? Is that how it is in California?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so you could buy something in the 80s. You know, you went and got an F-250 or something like that. You could tow a lot of stuff with it. I don't know that you could with a lighter-duty truck. I think I would, because nowadays the lighter-duty trucks, you know, a Ram 1500 right now will tow 10 or 12,000 pounds, whereas the old heavy-duty trucks used to tow that. You know what I mean? So I think I would find them something like either a Dodge or a big Chevy 2500 or a F-250. What would you do?
You know, it's kind of funny you bring this up because every year in Pismo Beach, there's a big trailer show. And it's, you know, there's most of the time people want to have a classic car that's pulling their classic trailer.
Right.
And, you know, some people are trying to stay period correct. So if they got a 50s trailer, they want a 50s car pulling it or, you know, so on and so forth. I think one of the big things that it comes down to is distance. And like you said, in George and Connie's situation, they're going about 1,000 miles. Brakes on a car are a big issue. So if you're working with earlier cars, you know, 50s cars, you might possibly still be having drum brakes. And when you have that extra 3,900 pounds, you're really going to feel it when you try to stop. And the other thing is, you know, engine transmission setups for some of those older cars weren't really thinking with pulling trailers in mind. So sometimes you might want to go with something that might be a resto mod versus stock if you're looking for, you know, 50s or 60s. But if you're looking for something a little bit more modern, possibly with a diesel motor,
right,
you know, has a little bit more power in the low end for pulling cars, I would recommend something in the, like, late 70s just because, you know, late 80s, just because, you know, diesel was really introduced, right, you know, in the early 80s.
The Dodge had the Cummins. Remember that one, the old Dodge D50 with the Cummins? They were awesome. You know, they were non-turbo, so they're pretty darn slow, but, boy, they got great fuel economy, and they ran great.
But if you're looking investment-wise also, you know, we're really seeing that these 70s and 80s trucks are becoming really popular and desirable right now.
Well, you know, they are. And the best part is you can actually drive them because they have air conditioning and all the stuff we really need nowadays. All right, now, let's see. Bill was wondering about a classic Mercedes-Benz or BMW. He's thinking about getting something, one of those kind of things. How expensive are they to restore? Ooh, I bet you there's a lot. Looking for like something in the 60s or 70s. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of those cars are tough, and you really got to be a little bit knowledgeable or hopefully have a friend that's a little knowledgeable when you go to make the initial purchase because, you know, some things on those cars, if they aren't working, could cost you a fortune to get fixed. But, you know, those 60s and 70s SL Mercedes, you know, like the convertible Pagoda style, are really coming back, really popular. If you do decide to restore one, you'll have something that's pretty desirable once you're finished.
You can get a 300D or something, you know.
Oh, totally.
And wide open, 60 miles an hour, 65 miles an hour with you, with a brick set on the floor. Yeah.
Both of those are nice cruising cars, fun to drive. You're starting to see more and more of them at the car shows, which is cool.
Yeah, but I know those are kind of expensive. It's not people. We get so spoiled with some of the, you know, the domestic cars. Having to restore those is so much cheaper than doing any of this other stuff. All right, now let me skip down to another question. This is something, since we're on this kind of deal, Elaine, and I get this. I get these things all the time. She goes, she wanted to buy her car for her husband, and it's a. She wants to know between, especially just figure the 50s, the difference between a sedan and a hardtop. Tell the folks what the difference and why hardtops are so much more money than a sedan.
Okay, well, the best comparison I can give, if someone doesn't know a sedan or a hardtop, the difference, it's a Chevy 210 versus a Bel Air. And that main difference is that post that goes between the driver's side window and then the passenger side window.
It's called the B-pillar, right?
The B-pillar, correct. So in a hardtop car, you're not going to have anything there, and it's a very smooth transition across the glass, versus in a sedan, you have that post that comes up on the door when you go to close it. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the best way. And I guess it's just a styling thing. Some people prefer that no-post look.
Oh, me too. I do. Yeah. Oh, yeah, huge, but they are a lot more money. And I guess they had to make it, they had to strengthen the top so it wouldn't collapse, you know, this kind of stuff. So that's why they call it a harder top, right?
Right, correct.
Yeah, that's kind of like, people don't understand how the difference in designs. I mean, just like whenever a car is a convertible and there's no way to make it strong, they had to make the frame so much stronger. That's what convertibles back then were, so much heavier than the standard vehicles. And it was a different, totally different design, because there was nothing to make the structure, keep the structure, you know, correct. You know what I mean? It was always tweaking and things like that.
Yeah, I actually didn't know when I was growing up, when we went to restore the floor pans on a convertible car, I didn't know you needed to weld braces in the doors, because the floor pans are so structural to the car that if you take too much out, the car will start to look like a banana.
Yeah, it'll start to bend. And all you see, all the doors always just hang down. Or just like in the older cars, the two doors, the doors were so big. I mean, those doors were probably weighed several hundred pounds. They would always hang down on the hinges all the time. And people would lean on the doors or sit on the doors. And I'm like, don't do that, because it'll never close the same. You know, it's just the structure on that stuff. So that's why, folks, that's why, Elaine, that's why the hard tops are more expensive, because they look a lot cooler. Right. All right, Jeremy, one more. Connor has a 1990 F-250. Ford XLT, which is a nice trim level, and also a 1987 Audi 5000. I put 500, but it's a 5000 with an inline five-cylinder. If you had to choose, which one would you restore? If they're both in the about same, the Audi needs a little engine work, but and the Ford is fine, but it doesn't matter. Which one would be worth more, you think?
Oh, I mean, well, if you're asking personally, I'm going to go with the Ford, just because, you know, I'm kind of an American car guy, and I know how to work on them a little bit easier. You're saying there's some motor issues with the Audi. I don't know how.
That's that old inline five, and it wasn't exactly the most. Yeah, but also I would think the parts for the Audi would be crazy expensive.
A little bit more expensive, a little bit harder to chase down any issues that you have. And I really think right now, like I said a little earlier, those later year Fords and even Chevys, Dodges are really creeping up in value and desirability, like tenfold.
Well, just like, if you could move this up to the people up here in Tampa, St. Pete, that are looking for a classic truck, this would be an awesome truck to pull their trailer. If they had a trailer that was maybe set up from the 90s, you know, shag carpet or something, or the Harvest Gold and all that stuff, 70s, 80s, 90s kind of stuff, it would be kind of fun. Jeremy, tell us about your site. What are you guys talking about this week on classic.com?
Well, right now we're still doing our designer series. Mm-hmm. We're launching videos for that, and that's, we went to Detroit and we sat down with some really famous designers that talked to us about cars they worked on, and they showed us their art and kind of just their life story. And so that's on our website. And we've been getting a lot of really good response from it. So if you're interested in that, it would be really cool to check out.
Because I've seen some of it, folks. I've seen some excerpts on it. It looks like it ought to belong on the Discovery Channel. That's classic, classicq.com. Check it out, folks. And Jeremy, you guys have gotten all kinds of stuff going. Speaking of which, have you seen the Ford versus Ferrari movie?
I still have not yet seen it. It's been really tough.
You need to kick yourself in the rear because it is awesome. Folks, if you guys haven't seen the Ford versus Ferrari movie, I promise you, you got to go see it. Find it somebody with a surround sound and a nice – I saw it, and I was like, even my wife was like, oh, my God, this is a great movie. Even if you weren't a car person, you would love this movie. It was just really well done, and it's pretty factual. I mean, everything was pretty correct, and what a great time to be a car guy.
And you know what I would recommend? Unfortunately, I haven't seen the movie yet, but on Netflix, there's a really good documentary that's about 2 hours long that goes through kind of the Ford Ferrari whole story, which starts in the 60s. I thought that was really fascinating, especially if you're going into the movie blind without any information. This kind of like tells you a little bit more about the story, or afterwards, after you've seen the movie, if you have some questions, this is a really cool accessory piece to it.
Jeremy, promise me you're going to go see it before next week and we talk. How's that?
All right, deal.
All right, folks, that was Jeremy Berenbaum from Classic.com, C-L-A-S-I-Q. Be sure to check out their site. You're going to find some links to their site on ours, letstalkwheels.com. Jeremy, great joining us today.
Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, thanks. Okay, we've got a real treat here. We've got Jamie Page Deaton from U.S. News and World Report. These guys every year do a Best Vehicle Brand Award, and she's going to talk to us about what they've done this year. Jamie, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
All right. Now, you guys have been doing this for how many years?
So this is the fifth year that we've been doing the Best Vehicle Brand Awards, and, you know, we saw some surprises this year. So it's a good thing the awards are turning five, because like any five-year-old, they're growing up a little bit.
Now, how do you figure out these awards? You have journalists, you have data, you just go and ask people on the street. What do you do?
So what we do is we take data from our best car rankings, and then we, for each brand that we're looking at, we take all of the products that compete in a given category, like SUVs, and we average their overall score from our rankings. Now, the way we get that overall score in our rankings is a little bit different than every other publication out there. So what we do is we collect and we analyze every published and credible review of a given model, and then we combine that analysis with safety and reliability data. So what you're really getting is the consensus opinion of the automotive press, plus, you know, crash test results, reliability scores, things like that. So you really get a kind of a bird's eye 360 view of what's going on with a given model. And then with the Best Vehicle Brand Awards, by taking all of the SUVs from a given brand, for example, or all the cars from a given brand, you're really able to see how each of those brands perform relative to each other.
Now, are you finding some of the reliability stuff? Because I remember one year that Ford just got beaten up because that was just all this horrible reliability. But it was one little problem they had with the sync system. And they were the first one to bring it out. So they were the first ones going to take a beating on it when it didn't work exactly right and they have to fix it. Because there's some things you can't really simulate. People screwing stuff up. You can't simulate that. You've got to give it to the public. You know, and you know, I mean, there's some, like, I've seen these guys build cars and they're like, I can't believe this person did this to this car. But that's okay because now we can fix it. They find out what it is and they fix it. And, you know, some of these things with a lot of electronics, do you see that really affecting the scores here?
You know, they do a little bit. So we use our reliability data comes from J.D. Power, and we pretty much use, you know, the predicted reliability for a given model. But part of that is from their initial quality study, which is based on, you know, the first 3 months of ownership. So in some cases, it's not that there's a reliability issue. It's just you didn't know how to use the stereo. Now, what we have seen, though, is, you know, consumers are getting more and more used to all of the high-tech equipment that automakers are putting into cars. Mm-hmm. Automakers are getting a lot better about having dealerships, staff train their consumers. But at the same time, you know, no source reliability is going to be perfect. And it does kind of pick up a little bit of this noise where it's kind of, you know, is it an issue or is it just people didn't know, you know, where the window switches were? So it's worthwhile, you know, as a consumer to really just do your research on it. And if you see something, you know, that doesn't really make sense, doesn't quite pass the smell test with reliability, dig a little bit deeper in on it. And because you might be able to find out that, oh, it really just was the infotainment system was a little bit glitchy in the first year, but they fixed it this year, something like that.
Well, you know, as somebody that used to work at a dealer, and I have friends at a dealership right now and things like that, and I was a tech for years and that kind of stuff. Sometimes it can be self-inflicted by the dealer. I mean, it could be fine. I've seen them go in and reflash a unit, and okay, the radio's just kind of losing. The Bluetooth isn't working as good as it should. They go, okay, let's just go and reflash it. Then all of a sudden, nothing works. And they're like, well, it must be the head unit. Really, it's not. It's some person didn't know how to do it right. And there's some kind of a glitch. These cars are like, oh my gosh, they're so high tech. I mean, I've got a car. I drive different cars for a week, and I'm sure you guys do that kind of stuff. And you get a test vehicle. Even by the end of the week, I haven't figured out half of what the vehicle does. I mean, it's just amazing how loaded with technology these things are.
Yeah, you've got to set aside time to just sit down for an hour in the driveway and go through the infotainment system, go through kind of all this active safety features is what really gets kind of me now, where it's like, okay, I've got to figure out how I want to test, you know, this side view camera. So on, you know, the Kia Telluride, for example, yes. and Kia won our best SUV brand award in large part because the Telluride is so good. It's got this great system where when you signal for a turn, mm-hmm. in the instrument cluster, they give you video of what's in your blind spot,
right?
Which is great, you know, when you're on the highway. Yeah. But I found it really, really useful driving into the office where we're in the city and we've got a lot of bicycle commuters, and not, you know, a lot of times a blind spot monitoring system, you know, that just kind of the light on the rearview mirror, mm-hmm. that's not going to pick up a cyclist. But man, seeing them there in video, that was a huge, huge help. Right. So, you know, as a car reviewer, you've got to take a little bit of time and kind of put yourself in maybe situations that you wouldn't encounter every day, but allow you to test out a system.
Well, you know, the funny thing, even I've just got that. That's my review for this week, is the Telluride. Even on the left turn, which most companies don't put the left turn in, where it sets up on the camera thing on the cluster, it mm-hmm. does it on the left side and the right side. So that's
yeah.
kind of cool. A lot of them are just right side. So this is really, you know, you're right. And just for bicyclists and things like that, there are so neat things about it. Like, I've had a car that, you ever been had traffic coming at you and you're trying to take a left turn and you can see a gap right here and you've got to hit it. You can make it, no problem. As you pull out, the system sees somebody coming, so it hits the brakes for you. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you're out in the middle of the intersection. Those are when you kind of go, okay, I don't like this system right now. You know, and those are the things you've got to get. That happened to me the other day on a vehicle that was, and it was just a brand. It wasn't one of the big threes. It was one of the other brands. And I was like, it hung me out to dry. I had to mm-hmm. punch it, override it, and punch it to get across the intersection, because it would have been an easy turn, you know. But, you know, it's just one of those things. All right, let's get started on this stuff. Now we've figured out how you guys do it. Let's talk about some of the brands and how they've done.
Yeah, so for the first year, Kia won, like I mentioned, the best SUV brand in large part because of the Telluride being so good. I mean, it's racking up awards left and right. But Kia also has, you know, in the last couple of years, really invested in their SUVs. So, you know, no matter what size of SUV you're looking for, whether you're looking at, you know, the Niro, which is a super small SUV, or the Sportage or the Sorento, or, you know, the big three-row Telluride, Kia's investment has really paid off. And for the past 4 years, Honda's won that award. And so this is a big deal for Kia to knock Honda off of that, you know, best SUV slot, because they're going right for the heart of the American market right now. And they have a fully updated and really powerful list, full stable of SUVs to take on what, you know, consumers are really looking for right now, which are SUVs.
Well, you know, it's funny. It kind of reminds me of Ram, because Ram never won anything. They were always like the third, you know, level, similar to the Kia, you know, and Hyundai. And they've had to work harder than all the other guys to get where they're at. And they're still working really hard, and Kia is busting it. I mean, they're putting more value in the vehicles, you know, than mm-hmm. some of the Hondas and Toyotas and things like that. And it's just like, wow. I mean, they can't be making the same profit the other guys are, because they're spending so much more. But they're really gaining momentum, and I think they're getting a lot of happy customers, and that's good for all of us.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's interesting too that you mentioned Ram, because they won our best truck brand award, knocking Ford off the pedestal that it had been on for 4 years there. And this one is really kind of interesting, because typically when a car enters our rankings, you know, it typically has a really high score, as everybody's really excited to see it from launch, and then it slowly goes down as people actually live with the car for a week. But what's interesting about the Ram 1500 is its score has just incrementally gotten better and better and better. And with the latest updates that they've made to it, where they've got, you know, this huge, you know, touch screen in there, a great infotainment system. And, you know, if you're looking at the higher trim levels, I mean, it's a luxury car that happens to have a bed and can pull your boat. And so it's really just one of those great success stories where not only did they launch a great vehicle platform that's really comfortable enough that you can commute in it, even with, you know, an empty bed, it's not bouncing around too much like you get in a lot of other pickup trucks. But you know, you'd be fine taking your boss out to lunch in it, or, you know, taking somebody on a date in it because the interior is so nice. And they've just kind of slowly, incrementally made it better and better and better than the competition. Now, the other thing that did kind of happen in the truck category, too, is Ford introduced the Ranger, which reviewers didn't like quite so much. So you had this situation where Ford's score went down a little bit, Ram's score went up just enough, and they were able to snake in with it. And it really is, I think, you know, a big win for Ram. And, you know, if you're looking for a truck, and even if you're a big, you know, Ford or Chevy person, I mean, go take a look at Ram, because they're doing some great things over there.
You know, you're exactly right. They seem to be like little ninjas and sneaking up on people. But, you know, I remember here in Texas, we're in pickup truck country, you know. I'm in Houston. Everybody with a vehicle is a pickup truck, because pickup trucks are now like your family car. I remember when if you're going to drive a truck, it was a work truck. That's all they were. Trucks were trucks. Then they became like your family car. I mean, I can get over 20 miles a gallon with it, which is not that much different than if I had a big SUV. It's as far as it's nice being high when we have floods and rains and crappy weather, and it's nice having the power to tow something if I want to. But it rides so good with that multi-link rear suspension and things like that. All of a sudden, I'm not giving anything up, and I can actually get 21, 22 miles a gallon on the highway, which is not that much different than, like, for example, the Telluride or something. It's just a few miles per gallon. But I've got more utility here. They're all just, I mean, it's amazing how good trucks have gotten.
You know, it is one of those things where, you know, if you're shopping for a truck right now, you are really spoiled for choice. I will say, you know, Ram won this award and they make a great truck, but what's nice about it is you can just buy the truck you want and you're going to get a good one because they're all so good. Yeah, and it just depends kind of on, you know, what gimmick do you want? Yeah, do you want, you know, GMC's really focused on, you know, their tailgate, you know, having all that flexibility. If that's really important to you, if you want a lot of kind of automated towing tools, go with the Ford. If you want a luxury car interior, go with the Ram. It just really depends on whatever you're looking for. There's a truck there for your needs.
Well, they're fighting tooth and nail. I mean, every little bit. And the consumer, you and me, are the ones that win on this game. I mean, they're putting in more value than they've ever done. And here's our truck, take it or leave it. It's like, no, please take our truck. We're going to give you all this stuff. And it's like, wow. I mean, they just drive so good and handle so good, and they're so quiet. You're just like blown away. I mean, that thing, my boss here had a Ram 1500, Laramie Longhorn, top of the line cowboy looking truck. And my, you know, one of the guys here that owns the network, David Gal, comes in, he looks at the truck, he goes, this is nicer than my Audi A7.
He says,
it's more comfortable to drive. I just drove it. And he goes, it's more comfortable than my Audi A7, which is, you know, $20,000 more. And he says, but besides that, look what I can tow and do with it. And here in Texas, I mean, when you go to park somewhere, you'll have one of those Laramie Longhorns, one of the big fancy Ford Platinums, or one of the Denalis, GMC. They're going to be parked out front with the luxury cars, you know, by the valet. I mean, these are awesome vehicles, but they're really great. But still, cars are still around. Believe it or not,
cars
people
are still
buying
around.
Cars. What was the car winner?
So if this is for the fifth year in a row, Mazda is the best vehicle brand for cars. And this is really about, you know, Mazda has put a lot of investments in their cars. Their cars, they just drive so great. And then the interiors are, you know, you look at a Mazda from the outside, and you're like, okay, that's a stylish economy car. You get inside, and it doesn't feel like an economy car. They're using some really up-level materials that are a lot nicer than what you'd expect based on the price tag. They've got some great engine technology, so they're getting excellent fuel economy. They have really good, strong power, and their handling is just so much fun. You know, if you'd be going from like a truck to a Mazda, it's like night and day. But, you know, and then you can, this included in this, so we looked at the scores that were included were the Mazda 3, the Mazda 6, and the MX-5 Miata, which is, of course, just an iconic sports car. And if you're really just looking for a car that is a true driver's car, there really is not one that you can do that's better than an MX-5.
Well, you know, Mazdas are just fun to drive. They've been that way. They came out with the RX-3 pickup truck way back in the 70s, and that was a stupid fast pickup truck, and they had all the rotaries. I hope they come back with the rotaries at some point, but now they have the new the gas-powered diesel HCCI engine. What is it? They call it the Skyactiv X. They've got a lot of neat things, and Mazda just keeps plugging along. And they've kind of been hidden for a while, kind of like Ram. And all of a sudden, people are going, hey, this is a cool car. And they're doing really well. So kudos to them.
And the redesigned Mazda 3 that was new for this year is just gorgeous from the outside. I mean, it really is just every time you see one, especially in their red metallic paint, it just turns heads everywhere you go.
That maroon, that deep salsa-looking red.
Oh yeah, it's great. Well, and the nice thing about it, too, is you can get it in a hatchback.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you, you know, you don't need the full hauling capacity of a truck, but you've got, you know, a kid and a dog, you can throw them in the back.
Oh,
there's plenty of room, and you're not taking, you know, you don't have too much vehicle. You've got just exactly what you need, and it's a blast to drive.
And they're priced really well, and they're fun to drive, and it's pretty hard to beat, and they're safe. All right, now, you guys have done this great. This is going to be real popular. You know that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, we're very proud of it. And, you know, the other thing is, too, is, you know, for luxury car buyers, you know, we talked a little bit about trucks, but the best luxury brand is Porsche. So that kind of goes without saying. I mean, they're making cars, they're making, but what's great about it is, you know, you can get an SUV from Porsche, you can get a station wagon from Porsche. All of them are going to drive like race cars. But at the same time, they're not going to punish you like a race car. Like, you can take them to the track, beat them up, and then, you know, put them into comfort mode and very serenely drive home in an interior that's just, you know, opulent and coddling. So those are great options, too, if you're looking to spend money on a luxury car. It's really hard to beat a Porsche.
You know, it really is. It makes you wonder, you know, when the guys like Hyundai or Kia are going to go after that market. You know, they've done so well with the Genesis. They're kind of going, wow, what are they going after next?
Yeah, exactly.
Porsche has done really well, and they make a nice product, let me tell you.
They sure do.
All right. Now, where can we find out more? If they want to look at all the data and everything else, where's the site that everybody can go to?
So you want to go to cars.usnews.com, and there you can see not only the best vehicle brand awards, but we also have awards on the best cars for families, the best cars for the money, and then you can just check out our vehicle rankings. So no matter what kind of vehicle you're looking for, you're looking for a station wagon, you're looking for a minivan, you're looking for a truck, we've got rankings. And again, it's based on the consensus opinion of the automotive press. So it's not just my opinion or my team's opinion.
Right.
This is the best experts in the automotive industry telling you which cars that you should be looking at.
That is awesome. Jamie Page Deaton, executive editor of U.S. News and World Report in the automotive section. Thank you so much for joining Let's Talk Wheels today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm here on the Mazda CX-30 drive, and I'm having a great time. This is a great little car, but I've got Dave Coleman. And Dave, how are you enjoying Julian, California, the pie capital of the world?
Well, I've been here for about 7 days, and I'm getting a little full.
You gained a little weight?
It's been a lot of pie, yep.
Well, I just spent the morning driving this thing through all the hills here in Southern California, and it was great. I am kind of blown away by it. I mean, it's a new vehicle for you guys, and gosh, I mean, what have you guys done?
Well, since it's new, we've done everything. But our focus with this car and with every car we make at this point is really on trying to make the car drive as completely naturally as possible. And so I'm sure we put you on some good twisty roads to really kind of highlight that and make sure that it really you could tease out what's good about the car. But yeah, making sure that it just the way it moves, the way it steers is kind of natural and intuitive. We've studied how people move so we can figure out how to make the car move in a way that our subconscious is comfortable with.
Well, let's start off with this. I know the CX-30 is kind of in between what size is it? It's between the 5, the Mazda 5.
Yeah, I think it's...
What is CX-5?
Yeah, it's technically a subcompact SUV, so it's we have a CX-3 and a CX-5, and it's in between those in size.
Okay, now it basically, if somebody wants that's going to look at this, is going to be looking at maybe an HRV,
right.
Or the Toyota, or something like that.
It's a Subaru Crosstrek, something like that, right?
Okay, yeah. The Nissan Kicks and this kind of stuff. Okay, all right. Let's talk about the design first. It's very fluid. It's very sexy looking. Mazda's kind of been doing this for the last few years. And they look so good. They look like a more expensive car than they are.
Yeah, our design our design game is really strong right now. Our designers are really kind of figured something out. They've got this design philosophy they call the Kodo Soul of Motion. It's like it's a Japanese word, but sort of evoking trying to make the car look like it's in motion. And they do it all playing with the reflections that the car makes rather than the actual surface features on the car. It's a very sort of organic flowing car that looks different everywhere you look at it because it's reflecting what's around it and creating the shapes and the forms that you see on the car out of the reflections instead of just out of the creases in the sheet metal.
What he's trying to say, folks, it looks cool. and it really, it's a good-looking car. To me, it makes the other ones look bad. All the competitors, they look, they're angular and everything else. And this is very fluid.
There's a real trend in car design right now to be really, really busy, to have lots and lots of creases and features and vents and lines. And our cars are very clean and simple. And we really work on sort of subtracting away all the noise and just getting down to the essence of what makes a car look good. And it really stands out because of that, I think.
Well, the car also looks bigger because of the big hatch opening. You open that tailgate up, and it's huge. And it's so much bigger than all the competition.
Yeah, so you know, we've had a car in this segment, the CX-3, that was designed for kind of Europe and Japan, where the cities are really small, and parking in small spaces is really the most important thing. And a lot of criticism in the U.S. was the hatch area was too small on that car. And so we made sure this car is a little at the bigger end of that scale, so it's still compact and easy to drive, but we have all the room you need for your luggage on this trip or going shopping or whatever, enough to be convenient and kind of be your everyday car.
Okay, now who's your customer? Who's going to buy this car?
Well, hopefully anybody.
Okay, but who you're aiming it for?
It's mostly targeted at younger families. It's
active.
Active, outgoing. You got all-wheel drive on this car, so you can get out to a trailhead really easily. We've got some off-road traction modes. So if you're trying to get to a trailhead that's up some crazy dirt road with a couple of big mud bogs in it, you can get through that and get where you're going. But it doesn't drive like an off-roader. You get on the road, it drives like a car. So it's really, it's a good car for someone who wants to sort of have an adventurous, unrestrained life, but only has room in their life for one car that can do it all.
So it's got a lot of changes on the inside. Just for example, I noticed that the speakers aren't in the doors.
Yeah, so this was a big deal for us in designing the platform for this car, was laying out the speakers in a way that they are more efficient at driving the sound into the interior. And the biggest deal was taking the woofer out of the door and putting it down in the corner underneath the dash where you can't see it. It's just like corner loading your subwoofer at home. If you put a speaker in the corner of a room, the room acts like an amplifier.
Right.
And also, when you have a speaker in a door, you have to worry about rattling stuff in the door. So you have to actually tune out certain frequencies and turn down the output of the speaker in certain places to make it stop, prevent vibrations that would make the car sound bad. Once we put it up in the corner, we can drive it as hard as we want to and really get the pure sound that was supposed to come from the recording that you're listening to.
You know, we were talking about low frequency noise, which is basically wears you out. High frequency noise, it interferes with your conversation. You guys seem to have kind of have a happy medium without the car sounding like a tomb inside.
Yeah, so we're talking about road noise now. Yeah, we really sort of study.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right. We study how people respond to road noise so we can figure out what stuff we should be targeting. And yeah, the sort of low rumble noise you get off the tires that kind of resonates in through the body structure.
Like all inexpensive cars have.
Yeah.
And this is an inexpensive car and it doesn't have it.
No, and it took a lot of work to damp that out and prevent it. But we've been putting a huge amount of effort into the interior noise of our cars to make them really quiet and civilized. And that plays well with that audio system, too, because you knock down the background noise, especially the wind noise that's in there.
Makes your audio system sound a lot better.
It does. That wind noise is in the same frequency range as the frequency we're using when we're talking. And so it confuses your ear if you've got a bunch of background noise at the same frequency as the music, right?
All right, so now let's go back to the design. The interior design is a little bit different, that you don't have a touchscreen, and there's a reason for that. And I tried it on the way up here, and I agree.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. I agree with you guys.
Yeah, so, it's very trendy to put a touchscreen in a car right now. Everyone uses a touchscreen on their phone all the time. But the fact is, when you're driving a car, you need to be looking out the windshield. And with a touchscreen, you have to watch your finger as you go toward the touchscreen because you can't feel where the buttons are.
It really is true, folks, so try it. If you've got a touchscreen, touchscreen, try to hit that touchscreen without looking at your finger and taking your eyes off the road. You can't do it.
Yeah, or try typing on a phone without looking at your thumbs. You can't see you can't feel the keyboard. You can't tell what you're doing. So we designed a system where the screen is farther away. It doesn't take as long to glance at it, and it doesn't take as long for your eyes to focus on it. So it's closer to your field of view. And then all of the controls are through some tactile inputs, buttons and switches and knobs that you can control what's on the screen, but also you can shortcut directly to functions where you don't need to look at what's on the screen. So like a touchscreen, you would have a play or pause button for the audio file you're playing. You can dig through a menu in this and find a play pause button if you really want to, but we just have a volume knob that you tap to play, tap to pause.
I love knobs. I love knobs and much better than touchscreens.
It's so much easier to use. You remember how to do things better because your brain stores different actions in different places. And if a touchscreen, every action's the same. You just stick out your index finger and poke at a piece of glass. So.
Yeah, so you don't know what you're touching. All right, now let's go back, and you've got a lot. The Mazdas have always been, even since the 70s, always been fun to drive. You had the Miata, you had the rotary pickups, you've had all the cool vehicles that I like, you know, the RX-7 and the RX-8 and that stuff. This is in a subcompact. It's not starts at 22 or 23,000. And it's fun to drive. I mean, it runs great. It doesn't have the most horsepower by any means, but you kind of put it to the ground really well, and it shifts sharp, and it's just fun. And how much work was that one?
Well, you know, it's kind of what we do. It's a lot of work, but this is the same work that we do on every car. What we really are always focused on making the car fun to drive, and that focus on making it feel organic and feel human, that's what gives you that sense of confidence and makes you really enjoy it. And the numbers aren't really that important. I mean, you mentioned it's not that powerful. It is actually the most powerful in its class.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's just not a very powerful class, that's all.
Oh, that must be it. There you go. That's it. But you know, you guys mentioned it, and I actually tried it, and I talked to two other journalists saying they felt the same way. They were like, your car, it fits you. The seats fit. Everything else fit. I'm like, this thing fits better than a $70,000 car I just drove. And I'm like, this fits good. It's comfortable. And it feels like I've owned it a long time. And I've just been in the car for 3 hours or 4 hours. I think I put 120 miles on it. And it feels like I've owned this car for months.
Right. And you and I are different sizes and shapes. And everybody else here is...
Believe it or not, yes.
Yes, everybody else here who's driving this car and saying the same things is also different sizes and shapes. And we all think it fits us perfectly. The way we did that was by understanding what kind of posture we wanted to put people in so they could feel comfortable in a moving car. And that's putting your upper body in kind of a standing posture. And we rotate your pelvis upright so your spine is aligned the way it is when you're standing. And so we didn't have to build a backrest that forces you into a certain contour or anything. We just put you in a position where you're in your proper shape. And that makes it fit everybody better. It also makes it easier for you to balance. And one of the things that makes seats difficult to balance comfort versus support is we're always putting big side bolsters on the seats to support you in a corner. And if we make the seat make it easier for you to balance yourself, we don't need a big side bolster for you to lean against.
Well, we can have bigger people, big wide people. You know, I'm not a little guy. Side bolsters it's not comfortable. Right. If you're 140 pounds, sure, they're fine.
Right.
But when you get to be 200, 225 or whatever, bigger guys than that, 6'5", whatever, they don't fit. I was in an Infiniti last week. It was $65,000, and it wasn't any more comfortable than this one.
Right.
And it wasn't any quieter either.
Yeah, we're really kind of pushing, you know, beyond our price class here with this car. And that's kind of what we do. We shoot above our weight at Mazda. You know, we really try to kind of push the envelope of what a car can be.
Well, it's a whole setup and design. All right, now, we've got the interior, we looked at that everything else, but talk about the engine real quick, and then we'll talk about, I guess we can talk about fuel economy, although I didn't even notice.
Well, the engine is our SkyActiv-G 2.5 liter naturally aspirated four-cylinder, so that's a lot of jumbles of words and stuff, but basically what that means is it's kind of our workhorse engine it's the same engine that's in the CX, the larger CX-5, it's the same engine that's in the Mazda 6 and the Mazda 3. It's a very technologically sophisticated engine, but very mechanically simple. It's a four-cylinder, no turbo, no supercharger. Being a relatively big displacement, it has a really good direct response. That's
right. It right off the line, there's no bog, there's no hesitation. It goes.
Right, and that's where we focus on. Rather than looking at peak horsepower numbers and peak torque numbers, we want the car to be responsive and direct to everything you're asking it to do. And a larger naturally aspirated engine is really the way to go for that.
You know, drivability is what we always called it, and it's very... that's good at that. It's really comfortable. Now, we've got horsepower. That tell us about some of the safety features. Everybody's going to ask about that.
Yeah, we've got a pretty healthy suite of safety features on this car. So it's got smart brake support, which is where it's using the radar and the camera ahead of it to look for anything in front of you slowing down. It'll automatically apply the brakes if you're not going to stop in time. It's got lane departure warning. It's got lane departure prevention where it'll actually do a little steering input to keep you in the lane.
Well, wait a minute. Let's talk about that real quick, because I've been in some of these vehicles that you're kind of go around to somebody's like on the side of the road. You're kind of going to ease around them. You don't turn your turn signal on, and it wants to jerk you back in the lane. I've seen where they've taken the pavement and they had the it moved over a little bit, and then now they finished their construction. And now they sandblasted, but it still can see the white lines. It wants to jerk the wheel out of your hands. You guys have worked to make it a little bit more subtle, it seems.
Yeah, so there's a lot of sort of ambitious programmers out there trying to make these active safety systems a little too powerful, more powerful than they sort of deserve.
Too active?
Too active for what they actually know. I mean, it's just a camera reading lines. It doesn't understand as much as a person does. So your example is perfect. Where, say, you're trying to move out of the way of a bicycle and give them a little bit of room, we don't want the system to yank you back toward that bike. We've driven some other cars that are really aggressive with their steering inputs, and it's really uncomfortable and disruptive to your driving. So we actually limit the amount of steering torque that the system can generate, so it can't swerve you harder than you can resist. If you go over toward the lane and it starts pushing you back, you can easily hold it up against what it's trying to do and kind of override it. As a result, it's not perfect at keeping you away from that line. We can't steer as quickly, and so we're willing to kind of touch the line a couple times. It you're not supposed to be using this as an autonomous steering system. It's for when,
right. It's just to help out.
It's just really for if you drift off and aren't paying attention. Our assumption with all these safety systems is you're driving the car, and it's only there as backup if something goes wrong. You dozed off, or you got distracted, or something happened like that. It should be an emergency system.
Guys, this week I was driving the 2020 Chevy Blazer. Now, you know, these things came out a couple years ago. I owned Blazers in the past, and I absolutely loved them. But they were off-road beasts. This Blazer, when they came out with it last year, it was kind of met with mixed emotions, especially with me. Because I expected something to be, you know, off-road and manly and SUV. It's not. If you're looking for that, it's not. It isn't CUV. It is a crossover. It is a lot more comfortable on the road than off the road, although you can take it off the road a little bit. It is really distinctive. People are going to love it or not. I know Matt absolutely loves this vehicle, and I do too. It's a nice vehicle, mainly because it's so distinctive. The interior is really cool. I mean, if you like a Camaro interior, this thing is like they took the Camaro interior that everybody loves and they stuck it in a CUV. It is looks like muscle car all over it. It's really cool. Now, it may not be as functional as you want. You know, the cup holders aren't the biggest and stuff like that. But, boy, this thing looks good. It really is. Now, it does have a little bit of a blind spot there and things like that. But if you get the upper trim model that has, you know, the blind spot monitors, it's great. Now, it doesn't have a blind spot anywhere near like the Camaro, but it does. Now, first of all, if you're looking at this thing, this is like a midsize CUV, and it kind of somebody would be looking for a Passport or a Grand Cherokee or maybe the Nissan Murano or something like that would be looking for this. This is a nice vehicle. First of all, it's a Chevrolet. You got to like that. It comes with either a four-cylinder, 2.5 liter, 193 horsepower four-cylinder, a little anemic because this is not a tiny SUV, although it's two rows and you can fold the seats down, the second row seats. And by the way, neat little thing. The second row seats are adjustable. You can slide them back and forth. So if you happen to have something a little longer and you need to scoot the seats a little bit forward, you can. So that makes it kind of handy. Or if you got somebody with long legs, put on this in the back seats. It's got a lot of cool stuff. Now, it comes with, the model I had was called the RS, which is kind of the sporty model, and it comes with all-wheel drive. Even though it had all-wheel drive, it did have some torque steer. Now, folks, torque steer is when you have a pretty powerful engine and you punch it. And it was in two-wheel drive mode, and so you punch it, and it kind of jerks the wheel to one side a tiny bit. A lot of front-wheel drive cars do that. It's just the way it is. Now, if you put this in all-wheel drive, it won't do it near as bad, and that's fine. It was just a little, it's just a lot of horsepower for that. The V6 that I had was a 3.6 liter with 308 horsepower, and they were both mated to a 9-speed transmission. They shifts great. It really has crisp, nice shifts. Performance-wise, this thing is great.
It says you can get 25 miles per gallon on the highway. I think I got 24. And it says 18 city. Around, you know, I probably got 17 city. So it was really pretty much everything it said. Like I said, it's five passenger seating. The model I had was more of the upscale. It had a base price of $43,000. So it's not cheap. You can get this thing in the 20s. Okay, but this one, but why? If you're going to buy something and pay for a lot of years, you know, go ahead and get this thing. It has, now also what's nice thing about the V6 is you can get it, it has a good 4,500 pound tow rating rather than the V6, actually all-wheel drive does. The front-wheel drive models have a 1,500. Well, that just has to do with starting off and things like that. But it has, this one had the towing package with the hitch guidance. So when you're backing up to the trailer hitch, it exactly helps you get there. It makes it so much easier. It's got a heavy-duty cooling system. Now, here's something that you want to thank Chevrolet for. Chevrolet was one of those companies that have, we all have stop-start. We all makes us crazy. And you couldn't override it on the Chevys and the GMs, period. This one has a override button. Thank you, General Motors. That's one of the coolest things they can put in here because I hate stop-start. Comes with 20-inch wheels, good-looking wheels and everything else. Interior had the 8-inch diagonal screen. This model had also the enhanced convenience and driver's package, which is a $3,600 option. Really kind of cool. Had the rear camera mirror, which is one of my favorite things. The really nice Bose infotainment system. It's got wireless charging, heated and cooled rear seats. Excuse me, heated rear seats, heated and cooled front seats, adaptive cruise control. It has a, let's see, has a special tilt and power tilt and a steering column, LED headlights, following distance indicators, forward collision alert, advanced automatic emergency braking, lane keeping assist, which actually works with lane departure warning, front pedestrian braking, so if somebody walks in front of you, you don't get to run over them. Sorry about that. And it has a really nice blind spot monitors. All this stuff is really handy. It comes with OnStar. It has the rear seat reminders, so that way if you leave your kids in the back seat, well, how some crazy person could do that, I'll never know. It's got its own 4G LTE hotspot, active noise cancellation, remote start. Thank you. The other day I had an $80,000 car and a Jaguar, no, $60,000 Jaguar, did not have remote start. Come on, really? It has a really nice infotainment system. It has the buttons on the back of the steering wheel, kind of like Chrysler does. I like that. Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, all kinds of, you know, like I said, wireless charging actually worked, and it actually worked better than most. Sirius XM radio, obviously, it has OnStar. You know, folks, as much as everybody wants to copy OnStar, it's the best. It's been around forever. You need the directions or something, you just call them and they'll send it to you. You need to make a phone call when your phone may not be able to get out, your OnStar will. It really works well. This is a nice vehicle. Like I said, if you want the old school Blazer and that's what you're looking for, no. I wish they had used a different name. Okay, but and saved the Blazer for something that would be compete with the Jeep, but they're not. You know, the Ford Bronco's back, and it's an off-road vehicle. The Jeep's never left. I wish GM had just said, okay, we're going to save this Blazer for something else, and we'll call this one the Montana. They have all these other names they could have used, but they didn't. That's okay. Like I said, if you're looking for a midsize CUV, this is a really nice one. It has all the amenities. It's fun to drive. It's quiet on the highway. Decent fuel economy. Pretty hard to beat, really. But check out now. One, like I said, the one I had was had some options. Total options of $4,600 worth of options, and so it came to be a little over $48,000 sticker. Now, I know you can do better than that. That's for sure. Sure, these things. One thing they do about that, they'll give you good deals. But it's comfortable. It's quiet. It's nice on the highway. If you're gonna get one, get the V6 and get the all-wheel drive. It's fast. It's really zipping around in traffic. It's fun, and you know. I just appreciate it. Check out the 2020 Chevy Blazer RS all-wheel drive because I liked it.
And finally here on the podcast, Matt Perrault back with you. And I am going to tell you about what I was driving. I was driving a 2020 Sequoia 4x4 TRD Pro 5.7 liter V8 Army Green bad boy. This thing was fun. This thing was big. This thing was powerful. If you need to feel like you are in, I don't want to call it a tank, but with the Army Green, it kind of felt like I was driving a tank. It was a ton of fun. Now, look, at the gas mileage on this vehicle is not great, okay? We're talking, you know, 10 to 13 miles in the city, you know, maybe a little bit better, 15 miles or so on the highway. But this thing is awesome for off-roading. This thing is rugged. This thing looks rugged. 18-inch, your TRD Pro wheels. You got your TRD-tuned front and rear Fox shocks, which were awesome. You got your black cast aluminum running boards, which were really nice. The TRD front skid plates and black roof rack. This thing stands out. When you're driving down, you know, a street, people know you're coming when you're in this vehicle. It was a lot of fun. Look, the V8 is a powerful V8 with a 6-speed automatic transmission. It's got great towing capability, great towing power. You've got your safety and convenience with your blind spot monitoring and your rear backup camera, your power lift gate, your power windows, your trailer sway control, which is really, really nice. Inside this vehicle, you got a premium audio 7-screen dynamic navigation, your JBL 14 speakers, subwoofer and amplifier were really nice. Again, it's a Toyota, so they need to start adding more USB ports. You know, there were only 3 of them in the front seat, nothing in the back, which I didn't like at all. This is a legitimate 3-row passenger vehicle, okay? You got 2 really nice captain's chairs, and then you got the rear as well, which were incredibly comfortable. I mean, you can pick. I had, at one point in time, I had 4 adults and 2 kids in this vehicle, and there was plenty, and I mean plenty of room, head space, floor space. You know, the only thing you could say is when the 3rd row is up, the rear cargo space is not that big, but it's not that big of a deal. You throw down those seats. If you need any extra space, you put down the 3rd row and you got a ton of space. And I mean a ton of space. Now, the vehicle is not inexpensive, okay? You know, I came in here with the TRD package and some of the advancements here. Powerful engine comes in at just a little over $64,000. So it's not a vehicle that's going to be inexpensive, and it's not a vehicle you're buying for gas mileage, but you're buying this thing for towing. If you've got a trailer, if you've got a boat, if you've got a big family, if you live in the mountains and you need to get around, you need to get through snow and mud and other areas, I mean, this thing will get you through whatever you need to get through. And that's, you know, I really found it to be really nice. I mean, I really found it to be fun. You know, in terms of the looks of the front of the vehicle, it stands out. You know, you got your really bright grille and headlights. You know, really, it's one of those things where you grab onto it, and you know, it's starting to come around. I mean, you know, Toyota's starting to get into here with the Apple CarPlay, which is coming around. It had Apple CarPlay, which I really did like. You know, those are things that are going to be needed as we go through this here. You know, it is a lot of standard tech. The TRD Pro stuff, I mean, if you can afford to put it on the TRD Pro, it's awesome. It does need a refresh, okay? The vehicle is getting a little long in the tooth, and I think there is one that's starting to come down here in a little bit, you know, down the road. I think we should see it, but, you know, I liked it a lot in the TRD Sport model, which was really, really nice. And, you know, the Sport Tune suspension, like we talked about, I didn't take it too much into the off-roading. I really wanted to, but I didn't really have enough time to do that. I wish I did, but, you know, these army green exterior color, it just really stands out. It makes it really, really fun. And, you know, I think if you're considering a Ford Expedition, if you're considering a, you know, Suburban or a Tahoe or, you know, a Dodge Durango, I definitely think that it is, you know, something to take a look at, something to get behind, something to check out. And the TRD Model Pro, it stands out because it just, the off-road capability of this vehicle is better than the Expedition. It's better than the Tahoe. Towing capability, better. So really a great vehicle if you're looking for a muscle, full-size, powerful, big, beefy vehicle with a lot of interior space for you and your family. So if you're in that market for a big vehicle, the TRD Pro, check it out from the Sequoia Toyota, the 4x4. I had it in. I think you got to get it in 4x4 if you can afford that package. I think you got to get it. Really enjoyed the drive. Really enjoyed, especially if you're living here in the desert where there's so much off-roading capability, so much fun things to do with the off-roading. Having a vehicle this capable is definitely something that would be a lot of fun. Check it out. The 2020 Sequoia 4x4. I had it in the TRD Pro model, which I really like a lot with that army green color. All right, that's it for the podcast. If you've not subscribed, please do so. If you like iTunes, please do so and go there. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. And we're back next week right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network for the podcast.